Coming up.
What will happen if the government cracks down on high-priced drugs and the truth about China's two-speed economy?
Your Money Matters has you covered all week long. Money Beat Monday, Stock Talk Tuesday, Wealth Wednesday, Heard on the Street Thursday, and Financial Free-for-All Friday. Your Money Matters from the Wall Street Journal. Ambition comes with earbuds. Now, Heard on the Street.
Hello, and welcome to Heard on the Street, the podcast. We are the Wall Street Journal's home for commentary on all things financial all over the world. Reporting from New York this week, I'm Miriam Gottfried, joined by my colleague Justin Lehart. Hi, Justin. How's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm all right. Today, we'll be talking about the haves and have-nots in China's economy. But first, Valeant's stock fell 16% on Monday, only to rebound later in the week. Charlie Grant is here to tell us why. Charlie, why is Valeant so volatile?
Valeant is currently caught in the crosshairs of the prescription drug price debate in the United States. There has been a large controversy triggered by one small private company, but it's triggered a large debate on research and development and the role that pricing should play in accordance with value that's brought from drugs to the healthcare system. And Valeant Pharmaceuticals is a large portion of its portfolio is has been seeing its drug price raised in the last 2 to 3 years, about half of their top 20 selling drugs. And that is making a lot of shareholders nervous that the U.S. government might be looking to crack down on them.
Charlie, when we're talking about raising prices, what do we mean? Can you give us an idea of what kind of a price increase they might implement with one of these drugs?
It varies greatly, but in certain cases, some drugs for life-saving heart medications have been raised by about 500% or more by Valeant.
500%.
Those drugs in particular are a small part of Valeant's portfolio, but a large percentage of their revenue is increased on pricing.
So what would you say, how important is the ability to raise drug prices to Valeant's strategy?
It remains to be seen whether they can execute without that ace in their pocket. I mean, since Mike Pearson took over as CEO, the shares have risen by about 500%. But this strategy has been employed through a large part of the company's history under Mr. Pearson. He said in an 8K filed on Monday in a letter to his employees that drug pricing is a small part of Valeant's strategy. So the company still believes that they'll be able to find deals that add shareholder value going forward, but we'll have to see about that.
And there's concerns about the balance sheet here too, right?
That's right. That's right. They have $29 billion in net debt. 2 years ago, it was about $10 billion. Their acquisition strategy has boosted the share price. It's grown the business in a lot of ways that have pleased shareholders. But at some point, the balance sheet will become a serious concern.
Is that why this drug pricing issue is the stock has reacted so severely to it? Is that why? I mean, it's just that people, you know, that it needs to execute because of the balance sheet. Is that
that is part of it? Just generally, Valeant is an incredibly shareholder friendly company, and their investors love them for that. But that has meant doing things that what might be technically legal, but push the limits of what is popular with the public. And it's not. It goes beyond drug price increases. Valeant is adept at paying lower tax rates than most corporations. They do this through ways that are legal, but not necessarily popular. Drug pricing is another issue, and they are known for trimming fat and slicing R&D budgets. That makes their financials look better, but it also builds up a certain hostility within the scientific community.
Now, Hillary Clinton, the leading Democratic presidential candidate at this point, has come out with a commercial, which I believe we have here to play. And it relates to this issue. So we're going to take a listen.
It is time to deal with skyrocketing out-of-pocket costs.
The 32-year-old head of a pharmaceutical company raised the price of a life-saving drug overnight by 5,000%.
I am announcing a detailed plan to crack down on these abuses.
Wow. So in that commercial, she's not referring to Valiant. What company is she referring to?
That would be a private company called Turing Pharmaceuticals that most people were not aware of until last week. Their CEO, Martin Shkreli, became something of a flashpoint in the prescription drug debate. But Turing is a small player, and this is one drug. That might be a particularly extreme example of the drug pricing controversy, but other companies like Valiant might be more economically substantive in that debate.
When you're talking about the issue of regulating raising drug prices, the market has interpreted this to really apply to all biotech. I mean, the whole biotech and pharmaceutical industry has been affected by this, correct?
Right, right. And there's great uncertainty about what the government would do, if anything. Probably, if the past is any guide, likely the government won't end up actually legislating anything. But this does guarantee that we'll be talking about drug pricing all the way through this next election.
We're going to have to wrap it up there. Coming up, our colleague Aaron Beck in Hong Kong will tell us about a great divide that has emerged in the Chinese economy. But first, a quick word. This is Heard on the Street.
Coming soon, all new podcasts from the Wall Street Journal, including
Tech News Briefing.
There are many ways to preserve your iPhone battery. Wall Street Journal tech reporter Joanna Stern has more.
If you're using this as a fitness tracker, so days where I went to a 45-minute spinning class, it was dying by 8 or 9. Exercise kills the battery.
WSJ Podcasts. The sound of success. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Heard on the Street, the podcast. We are the Wall Street Journal's home for commentary on all things financial all over the world. I'm Justin Lehart with my colleagues Miriam Gottfried and Aaron Beck. Aaron, everyone is worried about slowing growth in China, but that's not something that's happening across the board. So which part of the economy is really suffering?
Yeah, I think what's happened is U.S. investors are a little confused because they see some companies, especially industrial companies, reporting really terrible China earnings. And they see some companies like Nike reporting very good China earnings. And I think the reason is that, there's a lot of regional disparities and disparities between industries in China right now. And the part that is really suffering is sort of the old industrial economy, heavy manufacturing, resource extraction, construction. Those sectors are in a recession, but other sectors are doing better.
Yeah, and we've seen that, right, in the recent purchasing manager index data, that shows that, right?
Correct. So the manufacturing PMI is showing continued contraction in September, but the non-manufacturing PMI, which covers various services, is still expanding.
So does this have to do with sort of the fate of different levels of social classes in China and their, economic exposure to certain areas of the Chinese economy?
Sure, to an extent. I mean, the country's northeast, which is the old industrial heartland, is really becoming a rust belt. There's three provinces in China right now that actually have negative GDP growth. And two of them are in the northeast. And so it's really these sort of blue-collar workers in things like coal mining, steel making, who are suffering the most right now.
So when you think about it, so it's sort of services, consumer spending doing okay, the industrial aspect of things going, not doing as well. Is the consumer side, is the service side enough to bring China's economy out of its funk?
Well, that's the multi-trillion dollar question. I'm not quite sure. I think, so this year, services are now more than 50% of GDP for the first time. So manufacturing is no longer the biggest driver of the economy, but it's still huge. Even if it's 48% of the economy, that's far bigger than in, advanced economies like the United States. So if manufacturing stays on its back, China is not going to be, robust. That's for sure. So I don't think that just services and consumption can pull the entire country along by themselves.
If we're looking at, you know, global companies that are exposed to China, which companies would you expect would be doing well? And, you know, could you name some companies that might not be doing well given their China exposure?